Recording in progress.
Well, welcome everybody. This is the monthly mindfulness coaching call at the Mindfulness Coaching School. And today is Monday, March 6, 2023. So I'm glad to welcome all of you. Can everybody hear me okay, volume-wise? Okay, great. That's great. So why don't we just take, oh, good. It's good to see everybody popping on. Oh, Paola and Linda. Good to see everybody. Hi. Yeah. Yay. Michael, Lynn, Joanne, good to see you. All right, let's just get started. So why don't we just start with the centering, as we usually begin all of our gatherings, to practice the art of arriving and just shift, make that shift from getting here to being here. So I imagine we've all just sort of zoomed in from something else. So let's just take a minute to breathe and to shift gears. So if you'd like to close your eyes while we do this, that's great. If not, downward focused gaze or whatever is comfortable. So I invite you to take a deep breath in through your nose and out through your mouth, relaxing your jaw as you exhale. And I invite you to pause. To relax into this moment. Open your mind and your heart and your spirit . Trust what emerges. Listen deeply to yourself and to one another. Speak the truth. And come home to yourself. Take another deep cleansing breath and exhale. And when you're ready, you can open your eyes and rejoin the group. Okay. Hi, everybody. Hi. So let me just check in with you. I'm curious if this is, pardon me, if this is the first time at the school for you, if you've not been in a class yet, and maybe you're just sort of checking us out, just let me know. Anybody who's a newbie? Okay, great. Joanne and Sarah, and who was the, I saw another hand. Oh, Lynn. Hi, Lynn. Okay. And if I've, oh, Diane, welcome. Okay, great. If I've missed anybody else, welcome. this is an opportunity for the community, the school to gather together to reconnect. So a lot of you I've seen in previous classes, and it's good to see you again. And it's so nice to see new people. So I hope that you will just dive right in. And if you've got questions, don't hesitate to let me know. We'll probably have a time at the end. If any of you have some specific questions about the school, I can stay on for a few minutes to explore those with you. So what we are going to do tonight, I'm going to give just a short presentation about St. Hildegard. And then I think I'm going to Hey Matt, and I think I'm going to do a if you're interested, I can do a coaching demo. I will need a volunteer, however, so be thinking about that. If you feel inspired to volunteer to be coached this evening, we'll also just have a time after I present about Hildegard if you've got any questions or comments about that. That sound good? Yeah, good. Okie dokie. Well, let me. Well, I guess I should introduce myself because not everybody knows me. I'm Meg Hess, and I am on the faculty of the Mindfulness Coaching School. My background is I'm an ordained minister, was a pastor for like 25 years. I'm also a New Hampshire licensed pastoral psychotherapist. And a life coach, PCC with ICF, all these initials. I taught for many, many, many years. I taught preaching at a seminary that's near Boston, and I've been teaching at school at this school for about 5 years. So I really love teaching and working with formation of professionals as they take new skills in and sort of integrate and adapt those and grow into your professional identity. So that's who I am and what I do. And you probably heard my dog snoring in the background because he was like totally chilled out during the entrance relaxing thing. So my apologies if he's distracting. Fergus, he's very chilled out. All right, well, let's get started. I'm going to share my screen with you. And everybody can see that, all right? I'm going to move you guys up here. So I can't see everybody at once. So just to let you know, if you're, trying to get my attention, I won't be able to see everybody. And I am going to ask that if you've got questions about Hildegard, about my presentation, that you hold those until I get to the end, because I think that might be easier than I can't like walk and chew gum at the same time. So checking the chat and doing all this stuff, it just doesn't work for me. Anyway, so that's the deal. So let me give you a little background about this particular presentation. I first did one of the things that I my spe one of my areas of my niche, if you would, for coaching is clergy. And I coach clergy, ministers and rabbis who are trying to deepen their skills for leadership. And I use a particular theory, with what we would call a theory of practice for ministry, which is Bowen Family Systems Theory. And it's a way for them to sort of look at their leadership through the lens of the organization is a system and looking at how the leader is a part of the system and how you interact with the system. So I did this, I first did a presentation on Hildegard for that group. And it was like an hour and a half. And then the Bowen Family Center in Vermont asked me to do a 15-minute version. So I shrunk it down to 15 minutes, just the essence. And then Anne-Marie said, "Oh, you should do this for the school." So I shrunk it down even more and switched out and added in things about coaching. So I hope that it comes together in a way that is useful for you. Trying to pull together a lot of pieces of Hildegard is such an amazing character. So if you've never heard of her before, it's my pleasure to introduce you to Hildegard von Bingen. That means she was from Bingen in Germany. That's where the von Bingen comes from. So the question that I'm bringing to this presentation is, what is it that we can learn from a medieval mystic about human flourishing, especially when We're thinking about how can we live and provide leadership in a time of societal upheaval. So this is the question that I bring to Hildegard because she has a lot of experience of living at a turbulent time and developing her skills and her leadership and her gifts in the midst of a chaotic time. So Hildegard's leadership was expressed in an explosion of creativity. She was a prolific writer, and she probably was one of the first women who wrote a book. She wrote three volumes of theology. Now remember, this is, women weren't writing theology at the time. In addition to that, she wrote two medical texts, and she wrote hundreds of letters. She wrote to emperors, she wrote to popes, she wrote to local leaders, she wrote to lay people. She pretty much wrote to everybody. So she did all that writing. That's one piece of her creativity. She was also an artist. And she had visions, and she painted her visions. So if you have ever seen, any of her paintings, they're just phenomenal. So she was a writer, she was an artist, she was also a poet, she was also a playwright and a composer. She wrote something that was called the Play of the Virtues, and it is considered by some to be one of the first operas. This is again adding to everything else that she was doing. She was also a practitioner of herbal medicine. She was a public preacher. I mean, again, women weren't doing that. And she advised lots of people. Sometimes they sought her advice out, like popes and leaders. Sometimes they did not seek her advice out, and she just gave it to them anyway. So the wide range of Hildegard's accomplishments, I think, are remarkable for any one woman, but it's jaw-dropping for a woman who lived in 12th century Germany. So Hildegard's, just to set a little bit about the context that she was born into. So you might say that the marriage of religious fervor to military power gave birth to the Crusades in 1096. I'm sure you've heard about the Crusades in Europe. So 2 years after the Crusades began, Hildegard was born. She was born to a family of lower nobility in Germany, and she was named Hildegard, and the etymology of her name means she who is brave in battle. And she was the 10th and last child in her family. And it wasn't unusual for Catholic families at that time, especially the no families of nobility, to dedicate their 10th child to the church as a tithe. So she was dedicated to the church very early on. And even before she went to live in a monastic setting, she began having religious visions as a very young child. And she was enclosed in the Benedictine monastery at Dissi-Bodenburg at the age of 8. So, and when I say enclosed, I mean literally they walled them in. So she was connected to a monastery of men, and she was walled in at the age of 8. So again, consider her background. So again, the backdrop, you've got these the Crusades that are going on. There's conflict not only between the religions that are expressed in the Crusades, but there are leadership conflicts that are going on between kings and popes, so church and state, emperors and priests, laity and clergy. there was there everybody was just the society was in an uproar, and it was against that backdrop of societal regression that she became known as the Sibyl of the Rhine. And a Sibyl is a person who is who excels in mystical and prophetic wisdom. So she earned quite a reputation during that time. It's also important to note, if you noted her dates, she lived to be 81 years old. So to make it to the age of 81 in the 12th century was pretty phenomenal. And you know, that also has something to do with why she produced so much, because she lived so long and she had longer to do all of her creative activities. But it was just very, very unusual at that time. So when she went into the monastery, there was a woman named Yuta, who was probably maybe mid-teens, and again Hildegard was about 8 when she went into the monastery. So Yuta was her teacher, really. She was considered the abbess of a very initially it was a monastic gathering of women of two, and then it began to expand. But it was just basically Hildegard and Yuta. So in a sense, you know, Hildegard is the youngest child, and then she goes into this relationship with Yuta, where really Yuta is functioning as the big sister. So she continues to be in that sort of sibling position through her early years. So Hildegard, I love this graphic. I was a feminist before it was cool. She is often called the patron saint of late bloomers, or the patron saint of women of a certain age. So it wasn't until Yuta died, when Hildegard was 42 years old, that she began to sort of step out of the shadow of Yuta. She began to find her own voice, and she began to express herself. I think that, you know, her years of being a functional youngest, if you will, in that family, probably taught her a lot about, I would think of practicing strategies of rebellion, because youngest children tend to sort of break the mold. They tend to be rebellious. And Hildegard had a lot of those characteristics and qualities. Very interesting book about family order and birth dynamic, family dynamics and birth order. Frank Selloway's work on Born to Rebel. He set out trying to understand in his research why it was that people throughout a historical period would be open to radically new ideas. So he was specifically looking at the development of Darwin's theories and the people who either accepted or rejected those theories. And he just wanted to know if there was some kind of common denominator in all the people who were more open to something that was new and different. And he wasn't looking for this, but what he discovered is that it was consistently the youngest born or the later born in families who were the ones who were open to new ideas and to sort of setting old ways of thinking, old modalities aside, and challenging the assumptions of their day. So in other words, he said that the youngest born tend to be born to rebel. That was his conclusion, and that describes Hildegard. So I think that as coaches, it's useful to think about our own birth order in our own families of origin, and to think about how those histories have formed us and shaped us. And maybe they restrict us, or maybe our birth order gives us some characteristics that we can call on and bring forward both in ourselves and in our clients that might be really useful. So I think it's, again, it just useful to think about the influence of your birth order. This is me on the right. I'm the youngest. So this is one of the reasons why I really resonate with Hildegard as being a rebel. And that's my older sister. Just the two of us. And I like, as Frank Selloway suggested, as the youngest, I developed a very rebellious, competitive personality. And that was just something that just, it's just part of who I am. I tell people, it's like, I wish I wasn't like that, but it's a factory setting. It's just part of who I am. And so in 1979, I told one of the ministers in my Southern Baptist church that I was thinking about going into ordained ministry. And he laughed at me and said, "Ha, yeah, like that's really going to happen." And depending on your perspective, that's either the right thing or the wrong thing to say to a youngest who is a rebel and who is willing to push back against societal structures. So my competitive rebellious strategies kicked into high gear at that point. He's like, "Yeah, that's never going to happen." I'm thinking, "Yeah, I'll show you." And I have been ordained for 40 years, pastored churches for 25 years. So I guess, well, I guess I showed him, right? So again, I think it's useful just to think about our own life story, how we discovered our own voice, what the challenges were, and how we navigated pushing people or systems or organizations that push back when we tried to develop our voices and to make changes in our lives and to claim who we are and to claim our gifts and to live into our sense of what our deepest purpose is in life. So, you know, when we are working with clients, very often they are making changes and they are experiencing pushback in the relational context where they live. So part of what we have to learn how to do as individuals and what we're helping our clients learn how to do is to make these changes knowing that they're not going to be welcome by everybody, that they might get pushback, and to help them figure out ways to go forward and to live into those changes and those new ways of being. So this is one of the things that Hildegard experienced over and over again. As she began to develop her voice, as she began to define who she was as a person, she encountered incredible pushback. One of the things that Hildegard did, once Jutta had died, she became the leader of the community of women that had grown to be in DC Bodenburg. And she decided that she was going to move the con their convent across the river and build a new building, a new compound, new everything. And she received incredible pushback. I mean, this was not popular with the monastery because most of the women who came to the convent were also from nobility and they brought their dowries with them. So Hildegard said, "We're moving across the river and we're taking all our dowries with us." So not a popular move. She upset the equilibrium of the system, and so she received a lot of pushback. And one of the things that she was able to do was just to hold her ground and to keep going forward. She was courageous about making changes and about taking stands, which is one of the things I just love about Hildegard. So I think that as a leader, there are really three key elements and about finding your voice and leading. And I think of coaches as being a leader. I mean, that's part of what we are doing. We're providing leadership for people, inviting them to grow into their fullest and best self. So for me, three of the key elements of leadership are self-definition, self-regulation, and staying connected. I'm just going to say a couple of things about those, and then we're going to move on. So self-definition is basically just getting really clear about who you are, what you think, what you believe, what you want, what you need, who you want to be, how you want to express your gifts in the world, what your guiding principles are. And I love this quote: "We cannot live in a world that is not our own, in a world that is interpreted for us by others. An interpreted world is not a home." Part of the terror is to take back our own listening, to use our own voice, to see our own light. So Hildegard was, she was known for stating who she was, for being clear about her principles, for she the three theological works that she wrote were really all about developing her theology. And even though she was what's the word? She was still orthodox in her theology, because if she hadn't, she got the approval of the Pope for what she was writing. So if she hadn't been within the boundaries of orthodoxy, she wouldn't have gotten that affirmation or support. But everything about her, everything else about Hildegard was just breaking all the bounds, really using her own voice. She also, one of the things that she expressed so clearly, which was not necessarily, well, I think it was unique to her, was her theological vision. She talked about the greening force. And I love that she said, "O most honored greening force, you who roots in the sun, who lights up in shining serenity within a wheel that earthly existence fails to comprehend, you are enfolded in the weaving of divine mysteries. You redden like the dawn and you burn, flame of the sun." So this notion of greening, some people call her the first eco-theologian, because she was just so deeply in tune with nature and just the affirmation of life and growth and development is sort of this greening force that is alive within all of us. So it's the assumption, and I to me this runs parallel to our notion that, you know, clients are creative, resourceful, and whole, and they have this, we have this greening force within us. So that for me resonates with Hildegard. Again, she challenges you to be brave, challenges us to be brave, to declare who we are. She said, "It is not far from the shores of silence to the boundaries of speech. The path is not long, but the way is deep. You must not only walk there, you must be prepared to leap." So, if she was our coach, she would be really encouraging us to take chances, to take risks, to take leaps, to dare to live deeply. So that's the all of that is about self, you know, defining yourself and taking a stand and being yourself in the world. The second piece of leadership, I think, is self-regulation. She talks about balance and moderation a lot. She says a person who toils more than her body can bear is rendered useless in her spirit by ill-judged toil and abstinence. Living hopelessly and joylessly, that person's sense often fails. Hildegard was she had a lot of struggle with illness throughout her life, and most scholars, or many scholars, think that she probably suffered from migraines, And she would have these episodes where she would basically be paralyzed for several days. So it sounds like she had what probably would be a hemiplegic migraine, which is when you're partially paralyzed. So she had to work extra hard to take care of herself. And I think this is where all of her medical knowledge came from. She had herb gardens. She wrote these books about the use of crystals and other things in nature, the stuff that we would say today is kind of woo-woo. But her medicine is still being studied and followed in certain clinics in Germany. So she was all about finding that balance, finding that moderation, taking care of yourself so that you can calm yourself down, self-regulate, do what you need to do to be centered and grounded and rooted. That was very central to how she lived her life. She really modeled self-nourishment and encouraged others to nourish themselves. Jutta, who was her teacher, was one of the she liked to wear the hair shirts and deprivation. That was sort of her jam. Hildegard was just the opposite. She encouraged her nuns to dress in green and to ornament themselves and to just do all kinds of expressions of themselves that sort of didn't fit the model. But this was again part of her greening, part of her nourishment. Another important piece, I think, of Hildegard's cultivation of spiritual practices. She talked about the subconscious virtues and vices. And I went down, she has a list of 35 subconscious virtues and vices. And she says that you basically, through your spiritual practices, or however you define those, meditation, reflection, anything that really helps you develop your body, mind, spirit connection. She really felt that the purpose of life was to live in a way that invites you to grow into your best self, to cultivate these virtues. So I went through her list, and I didn't put all of them up. There were 35 of hers, but if you look at this, we talk a lot in the school about the VIA character strengths, which is the character assessment that came out of the UPenn work on positive psychology. So if you see, you look on the left, it's Hildegard's list of virtues. On the right are the VIA character strengths. And the resonances are just like, oh, wow, look at that. So you could just see she used sometimes different words, compassion, Via might call it kindness, truth or honesty, discretion, prudence. There's another list. This goes on, charity, love. But you see the parallels with the virtues. So I think if Hildegard was our coach, she would invite us to cultivate our virtues and to really practice living into these virtues as we set healthy goals and grow in ways that invite self-compassion and self-acceptance as we live into the best life we want to live. So I just thought that was fascinating, looking at the parallels between that. And the third aspect about being a clearly defined leader is staying connected. So Hildegard did a lot of things in her day and age that could have cut her off from the powers that be. She was always pushing back, pushing at the boundaries, and but she managed to stay connected. And one of the ways she did this was through her extensive letter writing. And towards the end of her life, I think it was about the last year of her life, there was this big conflict that she had with the bishop and the religious leaders of her area. They buried a nobleman on the grounds of her convent, and the higher ups were arguing that he had been excommunicated before he died, and he shouldn't have been buried there. And she argued that he had made peace and been restored before his death and should be buried. And so they the nuns went out in their graveyard and disrupted the dirt on all of the graves so that they, when they came to dig them up, they couldn't tell which one was the new grave. But she still managed to stay connected with the leaders. She wrote them a letter. They told her that her punishment was that she could no longer they could no longer celebrate the Eucharist, and they could no longer sing their masses. And that she wrote all the music for her religious order. So that was the punishment. So she wrote them a letter and argued with them and managed to stay connected while she advocated for her perspective. And probably it's the clearest theology of or her clearest expression of her theology of music is in that letter. So she just managed to stay connected. And for me, this is about presence. She managed to stay in her own skin. She managed to show up, and she advocated for herself and her perspective, even when she got pushback. But she stayed present. And as we know in coaching, our presence, showing up, being there, is just so critical to any relationship that's going to be restorative. Okay, I've talked too much. I'm going to wrap this up. So finally, in May of 2012, she was declared a saint. And in October of that same year, she was named a doctor of the church. There are only four women doctors of the church. So she is really in a league of her own. And one of the words that I think she speaks to us across the ages is that even in a world that is being shipwrecked, remain courageous and strong. So I hope that you find some inspiration in this model of an amazing woman. So, comments, questions? Anybody? Don't be shy.
Just a remarkable woman. Hey, she just, I love how she was younger and had the older woman sort of mentor, big sister figure in her life. And you said that when she lost that relationship, how that's really when she started to find her own voice. And I found that really interesting, how she was obviously incredibly creative and expressive, but without that relationship, somehow that freed up her creativity in a way. And I was wondering if you know what any more details around that, or what's the story? I'm curious about that story.
I'm curious about that story too. And interestingly enough, she wrote a lot about her own life, Hildegard did. And there was hardly any reference to how Jutta's death impacted her. You don't hear her talking about grieving. It was just kind of like a non-event, at least as reported in her writings. And the way that she found her voice and lived out her calling was very different from Jutta. It's sort of just the opposite almost of her. So, we can only speculate what it was that helped her to sort of create her own pathway. Again, I think it has something to do with the birth order stuff, but that's, you know, that's my interpretation. That's my opinion.
Yeah, and it wasn't traumatic grief, this loss of someone very important in her life that may have, you know, some artists, that's the story. Something big happens that, you know, and it's often painful. I mean, really, that brings out that creative energy into composing music or writing poetry or telling their story. And it doesn't sound like that was what it was. So.
Yeah, a lot of speculation.
Mm-hmm.
Leah.
Thanks, Meg. I came to this because I'm always kind of on the lookout for women throughout history, either real or mythical, you know, whether they exist or didn't exist, who can be models in the work that I'm starting to do and hoping to spend a lot of time doing with women. It's very inspirational, especially, you know, looking at a woman like Hildegard, who, when you really think about what was going on then, you know, even, you know, just people's health and the whole disparity between, you know, most people lived in abject poverty and women just were not considered or recognized that she had that spirit. And I could use that right now. So I'm going to. Thank you.
Yeah, it's again, it's remarkable that she was able to have so much influence and power. I suspect, again, this is my interpretation, I suspect some of that was because she did come from nobility. And that class structure still carried a lot of weight, I think. So that might have been part of what opened the doors for her. Again, I'm speculating. But whatever, she was able to utilize whatever gifts and skills that she had and push forward and just sort of blast through all of the stained glass ceiling. And she had a way of sort of navigating the power structures. And she would say things like, oh, but I'm not educated. I'm just a woman. But then she'd go ahead and just blast them. So she knew how to work within the restrictions, but also to push through them. Yeah. So I don't think we're going to have time for any coaching tonight. So let's just keep asking if you have any questions or comments or anything else? Yes, Lynn.
Yeah, I'm just curious if you know anything further, and I can do some research after, I guess. But, you know, that community, I mean, being walled in was really struck me, or your phrasing of that environment. I've always been interested in Julian of Norwich also. But what was that? Do you have a sense of how large the community was? Did you have other teachers? I mean, there's that it sounds repressive, but it might have been kind of liberating if there was a kind of, you know, interior world of gardens and, you know, a kind of constant education, or was it just religious practices and disciplines, which I guess would give her access to at least some.
Yeah, so again, I don't know everything about Hildegard, but
for that era,
when she started out, when they were attached to the monastery, I think it was just her and Jutta, and then they started growing slowly. You know, other women who were from noble backgrounds would come and join them. We don't know, but there's some speculation that maybe she had access to some of the resources in that monastery when she was growing up. And we do know that Jutta basically was her teacher. She taught her how to probably read and write. She taught her, she learned the Psalms, she learned how to sing, she learned music. I mean, all of those things were under the tutelage of Yuta. And then as they began to grow, and then when they moved across the river and she set up her own convent, there was obviously much more freedom there. They were not walled in. And then she went on preaching tours. She went on at least 3 preaching tours. So what started out as being really restrictive and walled in, just kept expanding. Her life kept expanding as she went forward. So any other thoughts about any other parallels that you sort of noted or might recognize about living a life that is a flourishing life and the invitation to develop your voice, to be more than you maybe think you are, or any other coaching skills that you sort of see resonant with Hildegard? Any thoughts about that?
Meg, I was just thinking, like listening or hearing or rereading the quotes that she wrote and the poetry, that it's so vital and relative now. She could be here now writing the exact same quotes and writing the exact same poetry, and it would be relevant. And which shows us, you know, humanity, no matter how much time goes by, we're still all here together and human. And it's all relative. And the other thing I was thinking, you know, her being a woman, because women were, the power was pulled away from them by men, unfortunately, that if she was a man, we would know that name as much as we know Einstein, as much as we know Da Vinci, as much as we know Michelangelo, like, we would know that name. So thank you for introducing her to me. And I'm looking forward to reading up on her a lot more and actually finding out about who brought forward her sainthood in 2012, how that all went about.
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't know all the details about that. I do know, I mean, it was Pope Benedict who was German. So he might have been certainly more aware or more, what's the word I'm looking for? Maybe locally biased, provincially biased to wanting to bring forward one of his own. But yeah, there and what little bit I do know, there probably were local saints, and they were considered saints in a regional area. So this was formalizing the process of making her a saint, was formalizing something that had already been going on in a local region. But I don't know. I mean, again, I'm not Catholic. That's not my background. So I don't know what all the machinations are behind how someone gets made a saint. And the other doctors of the church, I think it's Catherine of Siena, Teresa of Avila, and St. Teresa of Lisieux are the other 3. So, but I think what Hildegard had sort of in her favor of being made a doctor is that she had such this incredible volume of writing that she had created. She had written volumes of theology. So getting that kind of acknowledgement, but you're right. I imagine there might have been other women who were influential, many other women that we've never heard about.
I just wanted to say thank you, Meg. That was an amazing storytelling. And like Woody, I'm really grateful that you've introduced her name to my vocabulary, because I think there's a lot more to be ventured there. I think the thing that pulled,
pulled out of me was the fact that the volatility, the time of the Crusades, the time when we had a lot of change and upheaval, resonated with me on multiple levels, just in terms of the increase in climate change and natural disasters. That's where I am at the moment, to, you know, trail derailments around the world. There's just so many other things that are affecting our communities, that I felt like there's quite an interesting story around people's own emotions, and as coaches, managing and navigating those emotions as they're going, as it's quite a complex area. So my question was a lot to do with around how you link the Bowen family systems into your studies and things like that, because I think that's quite a valuable piece.
That's that another whole presentation. But yeah, again, you know, really a central piece of the Bowen theory, as I understand it, is around leadership in particular, is that, again, self-regulation is key. If you are in an anxious system and you are reacting and being even more anxious, that's just going to escalate rather than help the system calm down. So, and that's you know, one of the coaching skills is self-regulation, right? So if we're dealing with a client who is coming in, again, impacted by all of the drama and chaos in society, and, you know, they're up here, and we've got coaching skills like the skill of clearing. We can invite them to do mindfulness meditation practices just to sort of, you know, calm down, get back in their own skin. But that's, you know, that is part of what's happening in coaching, is that we, if we are down-regulating, then we can help them co-regulate and to, you know, calm down and be more thoughtful and be less reactive. So that's sort of one of the connections, you know, because Bowen theory is really a lot about anxiety and how you manage your collective anxiety that is contagious.
Yeah.
Woody, were you just gesturing, or was that a no? Okay.
thanks Woody.
did somebody else say something? I'm having a hard time hearing tonight. Any other comments? Yeah, and let me just also just check in with those of you who are new to the school, and if you had questions, I can stay around for a few minutes. But Anne-Marie will not be happy that I didn't coach anybody tonight, so you'll just have to forgive me for that. Sorry, Anne-Marie. Next month. Any other closing comments before we wrap up? Matt, you're looking very meditative over there. Do you have anything you wanted to?
I appreciate the story. For me personally, what jumped out was how she was able to act from within the system and to change it, influence it, and move forward. It just seemed like maybe a superpower that she has.
It was remarkable. I mean, yeah. Just again, when you sort of that, and this was like what, 800 years ago? It was pretty amazing. It's like, huh. Yeah.
It's inspiring. Thank you for the story.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Anybody else? Comments or, yeah, Robin?
Yeah, I want to put her on my, like, my personal board of directors. You know, I have my set of people. What would Richard Branson do? What would Hildegard do? So I often encourage my clients to pick out who they want to, like, emulate, whether it's, you know, in physicality or something else. But I'm just throwing this out there. And you've read a lot about her. I know nothing. I she seems very in touch with herself and very in touch with like the world, like medicine and plants and, you know, art, music. And I just wonder how outwardly, you know, maybe she was able to very well operate because she was so self-regulated because it didn't really matter. She's taken from her family in essence at age 8 and then put with this person, like almost maybe another mother in a sense. And, you know, I just wonder, I just think about that, like how much outward back and forth there really was other than here's my opinion. She obviously felt for people like the person who they didn't want to bury there. I don't know if you had any comments on that. That's just kind of something that came to me.
Yeah. I mean, from what I can see, she was out in the world a lot more than I think we would have expected for someone in a convent. I mean, again, she went on these preaching tours. So she was out, she was preaching publicly, not just within the religious community. So that was pretty outward facing, extraordinarily so, I would say. But I sort of think of that balance between introversion and extroversion. She was sick a lot. And I think, you know, that was sort of how she was metabolizing, you know, sort of outward and then drawing back in within herself and then going back out again. So there does seem to be some kind of a rhythm there. But I don't know. I mean, we're making some guesses just by the fact that she was doing these preaching tours and writing so much and people knew about her. I mean, the emperors and the kings and the popes, they consulted her. So, you know, she had her brand was pretty good, I think. She was pretty well known for her time and in that area.
Okay. You know, Meg, I was just thinking one last thing is the sort of the board of directors that Robin was talking about. Is who are our Hildegards of today?
It's a good question.
Right? It's just not, there's no real answer. It's like, it's all separate for us. But as women, I mean, you like, who are your Hildegards?
Yeah.
And yeah. They're out there. So it's like, and
yeah. I think that's a great question to end on, to be thinking, who do you want to put on your board of directors, your internal inspirational committee? And who are your inspirations that you see and are acting, functioning in our culture today? So thank you for coming and for listening about Hildegard. And I can stay on for a few minutes if you've got questions about the school, anything, please just feel free to ask.
Thank you so much, Meg. Bye. Nice to see everybody.
Good to see you, Leo.
Thank you, Meg. Nice to see everyone.
Thanks. Good to see everybody. Mary Jo. I
appreciate it.
Bye. Meg, I want to say hi.
Hi.
It's been a couple of years since I took a course from you.